Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey guys, the support seems to be dropping here for the podcast, so let's remind you guys how you can support the show. You can join us on Patreon, where you get bonus content, a lot of great discussion going on there, paid for, because you're paying for Patreon, podcast, additional podcast that no one gets to hear except the patrons, which hits every Friday. If you do a $5 pledge a month or more, you get a Talking Metal t-shirt along with that. There's video content. There's great discussion. So check us out on Patreon, please. Join Steven Saylor, Steve Hoker, Mike Jones, Dan Gerwin, Brad Deal, Patrick Schwartzman, Emma Clayton, Metal Dan, Jerry from Long Island, Michael Street, Joe, Fred Roots, Sammy Soupy, Drake, Matt Carroll, Jay Vaninsky, Jason Seth, Jean-Francois Blas, Ron Keel, James Bennett, Sean Morgan, Mr. David Gray, Kenny McCrimmon, Leo from Alaska, Richard Langbridge, Miles Atwood, Anthony Mackey, and Jonathan Turner. Join us there, guys. We want you guys to join us on Patreon. Thank you so much to all you dudes for your continued support. Another way you can support us is to go to talkingrock.net or talkingmetal.com and use the Amazon links. These links are good for anyone in the UK, Canada, or the United States. You just got to find your appropriate country. You click through. It's just one additional step. Then you go about doing your shopping on Amazon as you normally would. There's no markup. There's nothing like that. It's just for some weird reason, Amazon wants to throw us a couple cents here and there for anyone who links through our website and buys something. If you're buying a big flat screen TV, that, you know, we get a decent kickback. We'll get some dollars back on that. So the more you spend on Amazon after clicking through our links, the better. And I appreciate that. Of course, you can go old school. Just give me a PayPal donation on the site. Again, talkingrock.net. You'll see our PayPal tab there. And if you just want to do a one-time t-shirt buy, which a couple of you guys did last week, thank you for that, guys. You can also do that using the PayPal. Just tell me your size for the t-shirt, the Talking Metal t-shirt, and your address, and they're $20, okay? All right, guys, that's it. We got Tobias Forge from Ghost joining us again for the second time this year on Talking Metal. That's on this episode. We're going to talk about Papa Nil, amongst other things. We got Jason Rockman from Montreal, Canada, from the great band Slaves on Dope. He's on the show, too. We got some unheard music that people have never heard before. So stay tuned. Let's get moving. Here we go.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and
anything else we feel like.
We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. This is the Sean Baker Orchestra with Which Way to Radioland.
Sean Baker Orchestra here on Talking Metal. Make sure you support that guy. I love Sean Baker. Let's get into another guy from Michigan, Sean Baker Orchestra. They're from the Sean Baker Orchestra. They're from Michigan. And now we're going to hear a little Void Vader. Eric Kluber, their guitar player, is from Michigan. And guys, stay tuned for my interview with Tobias Forge from Ghost. This is Void Vader with Monster. We'll be right back. Monster by Void Vader. Great stuff. Good stuff. Brand new Void Vader song, Monster, which is now out on Spotify and all other digital outlets. Void Vader's Stranded EP has been remixed and remastered and will be released by Ripple Music as a full-length LP with two new songs on November 22nd, 2019. So stay tuned for that, guys. All right, and again, Monster was the name of that song. It's by the band Void Vader. Without further ado, let's get into the interview with Tobias Forge from Ghost. Here's a little sound sample of the song Kiss the Go-Goat, and then we will hear from Tobias Forge. I recorded this interview on Friday, so today is Tuesday, October 4th. First, we are posting this podcast, and again, this was recorded last Friday. So here we go, a little sound sample of Kiss the Go-Goat. Go buy the 7-inch of this in the Prekel extended version, and you know, big pack. I want to get it. It's like $90 or something. Amazing. Anyways, Tobias will talk to us about that. I think, can't remember. Yeah, we mentioned that. At least I mentioned it. And all right, I'll shut up. Let's just do this. Go buy. You can also download this on iTunes or stream it on Spotify in its entirety. Here we go. Hey, baby. Hey, Tobias, it's Mark from Talking Metal. How are you?
I am good, thank you. How do you do?
I'm doing great. I am totally psyched because today, September 27th, Prekel, the Exalted edition, is now out, and there's lots of cool stuff included with this, like the 7-inch Satanic Panic single. I wanted to confirm with you the two songs, Kiss the Go-Goat and Mariana Cross. Now, these are both Papa Nil on vocals.
Right.
Cool. And in the future, do you envision more stuff from the past, from the Papa Nil days coming to light?
I don't know, actually, what the clergy has in store or in the vaults. I do not know. I just know that this, you know, was found and released, and next project is making a new record.
Right on.
And that is in the now or in the future, so that's going to be something completely different.
Cool. Well, I definitely want to talk to you about that.
Actually, why I know.
You know, I love the new T-shirt that you guys are selling on this tour, which, again, talking about Papa Nil, he's suddenly in the front seat of the car, and we see the Cardinal in the back seat and the sister and Papa in the front seat. Is there any symbolism behind that picture? You know the picture I'm talking about on the T-shirt?
Yes, I know the picture that you're talking about. If there is any symbolism, there's symbolism in almost everything that we do. Not every single item that we have has something symbolic, but a lot of them do, yeah, and including that one.
Okay, cool. Well, you know, I love the music, but as a bonus, I love following the story that you put forth. It's always fun and exciting. So, looking ahead into 2020,
it's been said you're going to be primarily spending time working on a new album. I was wondering where the songwriting process is at this point.
At this point, essentially, I only have, as of right now, I only have one song, like, demoed, like, that you can listen to from start to finish.
Right.
Because I've been touring so much that I just went into the studio, like, in this summer just to basically just get my rocks off a little, just to sort of, like, shit, I just need to record something in order to feel that I've started. And that song was based out of three ideas that I had. And that's usually what it takes for me to sort of go into a studio and start hammering it out. And you know, I have, I don't know, maybe 50 to 60 ideas lying around. And which means that if I just invest 2 or 3 days on piling together three ideas at a time, that's usually, so I mean, it's almost mathematical.
Right.
If you take that, split it into threes, and there you have it. That's how many songs I can basically get out of that. As soon as I start working on my material, I usually, it usually goes pretty fast. However, this time around, I've been very adamant about folding quite a lot of time for the pre-production. Pre-production means being in a smaller studio from Monday to Friday, just making songs.
Right.
And I'm going to do that from January till May. And so it's 5 months of writing. Yeah, so, and you know, I guess 5 months might seem excessive, but the thing is that I'm also trying to combine. This is essentially going to happen in very near to my home. I've been either touring or recording out of 9 years in a row. And I have 2 kids and I have a wife, so I need to spend time with them. And since this writing is essentially going to be in Stockholm or very near to my home, so I you know, I also have to pace it out with a little break and, you know, breaks and just, you know, it's actually back to quite normal working hours, you know.
Right.
I work Monday through Friday and it's like 9 o'clock till 5 o'clock and working 9 to 5.
Right.
You know, normal weekends, but it's also there to, you know, I have a record in mind that needs to be of a certain, I have very high hopes for this record. I have very high demands on this record. And I want to give time, because if there's one thing that I haven't really had before making the other records, none of the other records really, was time.
Right.
Except for the first record, because that was written, most of it was actually written between 2006 and 2008, where I had all the time in the world. But obviously, debut albums are always different.
Right.
I didn't have time, and you know, the essential bit, the actual recording of the record is basically June 1st until the end of the summer. It just feels good to be able to sort of clear out, like, time to really sit with the material, make sure it's good, and make sure that it's, you know, balanced, and obviously we're in a different era now where making this record will be very different from making the last record, for example, in terms of outside disturbance.
Right on. Right on. And do you envision the people who are currently in your touring band, do you envision them participating in the recording of this next record?
No.
Right, okay.
Actually not. And that is for a few very simple reasons, is that I have never, in the history of Ghost, ever had, there was never any demands or expectancy for the people touring to playing on the records. for several reasons. One is that I've always had a favorite drummer that I've always wanted, that I always want to play on the records, who's never been in the band. He's never been in the touring band.
Wow.
And he and I work very well together. He's perfect for the studio requirements. He does that really well. And I have a favorite keyboard player who is extremely good at translating the things that I want him to play. And during the writing, I always play everything anyways. So if you start involving people, which I have done from time to time just to be nice, basically, just because I wanted them to give them an incentive, you end up in a situation where you have to tell them to, like, exactly replicate what I just did, just symbolically.
Right.
And it's like, in my efforts to try to be nice to people, that has also turned out to be not so cool. But I've learned a lot from that. And besides, if I'm not going to ask everyone to do their part, then what's the point? I don't want to segregate people. I don't want to be, like, favored, you know, this is not nepotism, that this is not, I don't want to favor people. So if I'm not asking everyone, I don't want to ask anyone.
Sure.
But it's easier to let people do their thing. And you know, basically all the people that are in my band are doing other things. They have solo careers, they have other bands. So I want to give them time off or time away from Ghost to do their things, because I know comes 2021 when the new record comes out and there's this 18 months of touring coming up, they will come back having gotten their rocks off. They'll be ready to do my thing. Whereas a lot of other bands where you have that demand to have people in the studio and every, you know, half of the band just sits around waiting for the record to be done, you end up having a lot of maybe not so good feelings,
right,
when you start a tour. So the touring becomes way more heavy, and because you're already tired of each other and you're already at odds about this, that, or the other, or the record didn't come out the way that he or she wanted it, and you know, you just fuel a lot of potential negativity into touring. And I am very determined to make records. I don't need necessarily other people to make those records, except for the ones that I choose myself. And I am a very, very determined tour artist, and I want the tours to be very good as well. So that's the short answer.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. Hey, I wanted to ask you, you know, I go see you guys every time you're in the New York, New Jersey area. I'll be seeing you in Trenton, New Jersey on October 25th. But one thing I see, you know, I go see Judas Priest, it's all old white guys. I go see Panic at the Disco, it's all, you know, 20 and something chicks. I go see Arcade Fire, it's all 30 something hipsters. With Ghost, I see the metalheads, I see the hipsters, I see the goth girls, I see frat boys, I see old biker dudes, I even see some suburban soccer moms. Why is your audience so diverse? Any guesses as to why that is?
I think that there is a little bit for anyone in there. And I think that just because the music and also the style of presentation is embracive of essentially 50 years of, possibly even more, 50 years of rock and roll, I think you could, I think that as long as it reaches out to those people, it has the tendency to strike, you know, strike a chord,
right,
within all these different clientels, which is fantastic. I think I love that. I was in the beginning of our tours. In 2011 and 12, essentially, or especially when we started touring America and we started headlining a lot. I was actually a little bit worried when I saw the mixture of people, because I was And this is naively thought of from my end, I guess, because I wasn't, I thought, when I saw the diversity in the crowd, I was happy, but I was afraid that, you know, one group of people might repel the other.
Right.
So that the hardcore metal, you know, vest wearing, you know, kick-ass metal fans, that they will be deterred by the fact that, you know, shit, the hipsters are here, or the you know, obviously they won't you know, they won't say no to the goth girls.
Right.
So it's always better, you know, that's a given. But you know, and also since we always had, as soon as we sort of skipped the whole, we were always adamant about me and my agent that we were going to play all ages shows, which we've been trying to do for the best of our ability. And as soon as, you know, kids started appearing at the shows, we've always been very informative to the crowd. Like, you can't fucking slam around a whole lot. You can't stage dive. I mean, one, you're not welcome on the stage anyway. So, but, you know, you have to be mindful. There are people out there who are very frail. You cannot be
right.
Fucking, you're not at a Cro-Mag show.
Right.
And, you know, that was also like a sort of a public relations message that also I was a little bit worried about, like, oh, you know, which I'm sure that there were probably a few pedals out there that felt like, oh, man, ghosts ain't fucking metal anymore, you know, because I can't fucking dive foot first into the ground. Sure, okay, fine. If that doesn't make us metal, I'm all fine with that. But
right.
You can't fucking headbutt like a 10-year-old. That's not cool. So if that is not metal, then okay, fuck you. but that has never really changed. Or, I mean, the headbutt, the dives into the crowd changed. But a lot of these people come back, and they seem to be enjoying it together, which is very heartwarming to see, because I really, really want Ghost to be a very embracive, non-segregating band that welcomes essentially everyone who are open to the idea of openness.
Absolutely.
That's the point. We want you to be happy together, right?
Right on.
Time to wrap up, guys.
Is there time for one more super quick question, or we need to wrap it?
You have a minute, literally.
Okay.
A minute.
Hey, just Tobias, on a personal note, my good buddy Watt, a good friend of mine, last Halloween, almost a year ago, released a Ghost parody, if you will, of Ghostbusters, the theme song, which I thought he did really a great job on that. I was wondering if you got a kick out of that or what you thought of it.
I don't remember this. Actually, I'm so sorry.
Oh, no problem.
I mean, I've heard different takes of and the, especially the Ghostbusters sort of, I hate to break it, but I've heard that many times, like different ones.
Okay.
But I'm sure if it came out of like about a year, I was probably shown it and I probably liked it.
Yeah, you tweeted it out. So we thought that you approved of it. So. All right. Very good.
I'm sorry.
Oh, and you did tweet it out, at least the official Ghost Twitter put out a tweet about it, so I thought maybe you were aware of it. But
Okay. That might go to show that I am not responsible for our tweets.
Right.
And we get, like, a ton of traffic coming in and out, so it's like I can't remember each individual one. But I've seen a few that were really funny, so I'm assuming that was one of them.
Right.
So
right.
Thumbs up.
Okay. Very good. Thanks, Emma. Thanks, Tobias. And always great to talk with you. I will see you in Trenton on October 25th.
Looking forward to it. Have a nice day.
You too.
Yeah, the sound of Papa Nil's saxophone right there, guys, on Miasma off of Prequel. Papa Nil rising, right, guys? I mean, that's gotta be the case. That's gotta be the case. At least that's what I'm thinking. And I guess we'll, as Tobias said, have to consult the clergy to see what's going on, right? So without further ado, let's get right into my next interview. This is with Jason Rockman, a friend of mine from Montreal, Canada. Always treats us so great when we meet up in Montreal and in New York, too. We hung out in New York once, too. So Jason's a great guy, and he's a radio personality in Montreal, Canada. But he has his great, great band, too, Slaves on Dope. I always love listening to Slaves on Dope. So let's do that right now. This is Electric Kool-Aid from 2016 by Slaves on Dope, followed by my interview with Jason Rockman.
It's not the dream that I thought I couldn't see. It's just a nightmare that never sets me free. It's not the answer that I've been waiting for. It's just a question clawing at my door. Cashing in on the latest fact. Now cut the cord and embrace the enemy. This ain't no holiday. Your life's a damn cliche.
Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and calling in my buddy from Montreal, Canada, Jason Rockman from Slaves on Dope. Jason, how are you, man?
I'm good, man. I'm really, really good.
It was so great. Before we talk about everything that's going on with Slaves on Dope, it was so great hanging out at Heavy Montreal this year with you. Always so much fun up there, and really, it's become, I think, my favorite North American music festival. So good.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, we're really great. Grateful and blessed to have a festival like that here in Montreal. I mean, as you know, because I know you follow the metal scene pretty closely, you know, we were just named, you know, an official metal city in North America.
I saw that, yeah.
Metal. So, yeah, Montreal's always had a great history with just loving metal in Quebec and, you know, the province in Quebec in particular. So to have a festival like that in Montreal, we're pretty blessed. And it's great, you know, because all us metalheads get to hang out for a couple of days together and, you know, people that you don't get to usually see all the time, we're all gathered in one area. So yeah, it is a fun weekend. I always tell people, if you've never been to Heavy Montreal, you got to go.
Absolutely. It is the best. I love it every year. And man, I'm listening to these covers you guys released. Covers Volume 2 by Slaves on Dope, out today, actually last Friday by the time you listeners are hearing this. Great stuff, man. I mean, let's go through these. Let's start with one of my favorites. And I'm hesitant to say this, but I think I like it better than the original. And I'm going to say Van Halen, I'll Wait.
Wow. Okay.
I guess I don't like it better than the original, but it's close, man. I mean, there's a whole new spin on it here. Can you talk a little bit about it?
You know, I'd love to take credit, but a lot of the work for this was done by Kevin.
Sure.
Kevin, you know, our guitar player, who also, you know, records and produces everything and engineers everything. He put a lot of work into this. You know, we picked the songs. We kind of picked the songs together. There's a couple that he wanted more than I did, and then we did with the first covers volume. We just said, like, let's just cover some songs we like and let's have some fun with it. And when it came to, you know, the instrumentation and the takes on it, all that was him and the guys. I tried to sing most of those songs as faithfully as I could. But the All Wait one was really, really interesting, because I was like, how are we going to do this? And how is this going to, you know, like, we don't really have keyboards. But he made it work, man. And I think it sounds great. And
it's, yeah, it does.
You know, to take on David Lee Roth is never easy. All those singers on those songs are all singers that I really respect. So it was kind of a bit of a daunting task, especially Van Halen. I was like, man, you know, some of this stuff is it's Diamond Dave. So you kind of want to tread lightly, but at the same time, you got to flex a bit and give it your all. So I had a lot of fun with it, definitely. But I think what really makes that song and our take on that song unique is the way the instrumentation is a tad different.
Yeah, it's totally kind of reimagined. It gives it a whole new spin.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, I scratched definitely. When I first put it on, I was like, wait, is this I'll Wait or is this not? And then, of course, when the melody kicks in, I was like, oh, yeah, you know. But yeah, I really dug what you guys did with that. Fun stuff. A lot of great bands on this, too, that you guys cover. I mean, it's diverse. And I would think
it really is.
The little bit that I know about you is that musically you are a pretty diverse guy, right?
Yeah, I like everything. I mean, I do work for a rock station. I do rep, you know, a heavy metal festival, but I'm also really into hip hop. I'm into, you know, R&B. I'm into soul. I'm into folk music. I'm into indie stuff. I really love music in general. So it's fun when you get to do stuff on a covers EP and throw people for a loop a bit, because I think when they hear stuff like Private Eyes by Hall and Oates and then, you know, Carol Pope, in Rough Trade, you know, High School Confidential, there's a couple of Canadian songs on there that a lot of people might not know from the States, like the Paolas.
Right. I was going to ask you about the Paolas, because I'm not overly familiar with them. Can you talk a little bit about that band?
Yes. Yeah. So the Paolas are basically, it was Bob Rock was in a band in Canada called the Paolas.
Oh, wow.
The producer, Bob Rock. He was also in a band called Rock and Hyde, but the Paolas were basically Bob Rock. There's two guys that had this band called the Paolas. They were huge in Canada. And that song, Eyes of the Stranger, in the 80s was really, really big, especially on the station that I grew up on, Shome, and the one I work at now. So it was a really influential song to a lot of us growing up in Canada. And when you go back and you listen to the Paolas, you're like, wow, they were so ahead of their time. They were great, great songs. And it's funny how Bob Rock ended up going on to being, you know, one of the most successful producers in the world. So it was fun to go back and cover that song. And I actually, when I first posted us singing it, recording it in the studio a couple of years back when we started working on it, I got a message from Bob Rock's son, who saw it on Instagram, and he instantly wanted me to send him a copy of the song when it was done, because I guess he wanted to try to get it to his dad.
Cool. That's awesome. And then, of course, a New York band, Quicksand. I was very happy to see them on the your version of their song on the Slaves on Dope Covers Volume 2 album. Can you talk a little bit about what song you cover by them and maybe a little bit about the band in general?
Well, we covered Phaser. Quicksand, you know, when Kevin and I started this band, there were a few places where musically we kind of came together on, in terms of like bands we like, a couple of bands that we always agreed on. One of them was Quicksand, you know, Faith No More, Caius. There was these bands that we both would agree, yes, we love these bands exactly equally, but then on other stuff, we don't agree at all. Like, we have completely different views on music, but there are these bands that we both kind of dug, and Quicksand was one of them. I mean, I adore Walter. I think he's not only a nice human being. I've gotten a chance to talk to him a few times, and I've had him on my show, and he's a really, really nice, nice guy. But he's also, to me, he's like the post hardcore Paul McCartney. You know, he's one of these guys that's one of these singer songwriter guys that can do whatever he wants to do and has all these projects on the go, but all of them are quality. And I mean, and obviously even before Quicksand, I mean, that was kind of what came out of the ashes of all his hardcore stuff. So it was fun for us to go back and revisit a song from Slip, because that record meant so much to us when our band first formed. And I've always liked that song, liked that song. And I think the nicest thing was when we sent it to Walter, he really said, wow, this is great.
Cool.
And that's going to be the first video we're going to do for the EPs is Phaser. We're going to do a performance video for that.
Nice. And the band that I just adore, I know you do too. You mentioned them just a minute ago, Caius, Green Machine by Caius. Great version of that one too. And that, I mean, some of these covers, I mean, it's bold for you guys to try them, because, I mean, honestly, you could fall flat on your face. I don't think you do. I think you succeed with all of them. They're all rocking. But I love this Green Machine cover. How did the idea to do Green Machine come about?
Just our love for Caius. And and I've always loved John Garcia, and he's such an incredible vocalist. And
unique sound to his voice too, you know?
Yeah, man. Really, really unique. And just a ballsy singer, you know, and a real rock singer. And it's funny that I never knew this, but his biggest influence is Ian Astbury from The Cult. And I get it now. I mean, when I hear him and I hear how he approaches vocals, I'm like, wow, okay, that makes a lot of sense. But I love Caius so much. And I got to see, you know, I've seen John many times in his other projects, but I got to see that Caius Lives tour when it came through. And then when they,
yeah, I saw it twice, actually. Yeah, so good. I saw it in New York and New Jersey.
Well, when they came through the second time and they had to be Vistachino because they weren't allowed to be called Caius Lives anymore, I saw that as well. And just every time I get to see John sing, it just blows me away. That's, you know, Caius is not an easy band to cover. But we really, really wanted to do it. And I think that was one of the ones, I think that and Phaser were my favorites to do. They were like no-brainers for me, and I've been singing those songs for so long, just as a fan along in my car, or you know, if I'm listening to it on a Walkman, or I say a Walkman, man, I'm dating myself. If I'm listening to it on headphones, there's songs I would always sing along to. So those were kind of no-brainers for us.
Right on. And it's been a number of years at this point, since Horse, the last album of original material by Slaves on Dope. Mm. Are you and Kevin thinking about new original material at this point, or is that not in the cards?
Yeah, we really do want to make another record. And I think because Kevin and I, you know, we're best friends. We live really close to each other. Like, he lives two blocks away from me. We see each other all the time. We talk all the time. But a lot of the times we chat mostly about other stuff besides music, because both of us are so, so busy. You know, he's producing bands. He's working nonstop in his studio. And I've got, you know, as you know, I've got 1,000 other things on the go. So Slaves on Dope tends to take a bit of a backseat sometimes for us. But next year is the 20th anniversary of Inches from the Mainline. So, you know, that was the record that pretty much, I don't want to say put us on the map, but at least in America, I mean, it was the first record that people in the U.S. really knew from us. And it was the one that we did on Sharon and Ozzy's label. So we're definitely going to be re-releasing that record on vinyl. And there is talk of maybe doing some anniversary shows for that record, which, you know, I'm not a big fan of going and rehashing records. And you know, I like always the idea of moving forward, but you know, there are people that really, really like that album. So I think we might do some stuff with that record next year.
And was that ever released on vinyl before? Will this be
never,
the first time?
Never. It only got up online last year or the year before. So it hadn't been up on even streaming yet. So because that record came out in 2000 and it was kind of on the cusp of, you know, the music industry just falling apart. So it was, you know, Napster, that was the year of Napster. It was the year that everything kind of changed, was 2000. So The record's up. It's the record that gets the most streams. It's the, all the songs, you know, kids that were, you know, that are in their 30s now, that was their high school angry record.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
So I get why a lot of people have an attachment to that album. So we're definitely gonna do something for that next year. And yeah, we've got, I think 6 or 7 songs left over from Horse, or 8, that we want to do some stuff with and maybe write a few more. It's too bad too, because with Horse, it really came out at a weird time. We were both in the middle of doing a lot of other stuff. We didn't really commit to touring. We didn't do any touring for that record. I think we did 2 shows. So we kind of shot ourselves in the foot, which is really unfortunate, because I really do feel it's a solid record. And I think we did some good stuff with that album. Yeah, I mean, there was some really good stuff on there. And
some impressive guest stars on that record, too. Remind me, the Mastodon.
We had Bill.
Yeah, right.
A good buddy of mine played guitar on that. We had HR from Bad Brains. We had DMC cool. on that record.
Right on.
So we had a lot of really cool guests on that album. And we have a video that's half done with Bill that we're going to put out probably next year. So we do have a couple of things left from Horse, but Inches has never, we've never put out anything on vinyl besides the, you know, that song that we did with DMC and Chuck D, which is on DMC's EP, but we've never really done Slaves on Dope Records, per se, like on vinyl. So we're excited to put Inches out on vinyl for sure.
Cool. And just a general question. I think I read that now vinyl is selling just as much as CDs and more, right?
I think CDs have really just kind of taken a nosedive, and vinyl is the last physical format that's left that people are really going to buy into, which is amazing considering it was completely dead 20 years ago almost,
right?
Except for audiophiles. You know, if you're an audiophile or you're a collector, you know, they made limited batches of vinyl, but now vinyl is kind of making a comeback, and it just shows you the power of the ritual. You know, people still love that. People that discover it love that ritual of taking it out of the packaging, putting it on a turntable. And there's a convenience to streaming. There's the nice power of like having less around you and not being cluttered with stuff, but people do love their stuff and people do love something that's tangible, and records are that, you know? So I think the combination, I've always said this, you know, the combination of having a streaming library and then a physical library of vinyl is pretty much the perfect thing for any music fan.
Right. And such different sounds that they get, I think it's refreshing to hear that vinyl, and it is absolutely a different sound, you know, and
it's a different experience completely. And I really like, I like vinyl. I really do. I mean, I have a big vinyl collection, and I love putting a record on. I mean, it's more work, especially if you have a double LP album, you know, you've got 4 sides to flip. It can be a bit of a pain sometimes, but it's worth it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I got the last Ghost record pre-Prekel on cassette. Mm-hmm. They did a cassette run of that, and I pulled out the old Walkman, which still worked, and was listening to that. And that too was a very different, sonic experience than vinyl or digital, you know, or the streaming stuff. So it's definitely, you get different sounds with different formats.
Yeah, I have a few of these re-release cassettes that I've gotten, over the years from working at the station and stuff, or bands have brought them in. And cassette isn't a format that I really would ever want to go back to, because I remember when they would snap, or they would come on, or they would, the spool would come out, and I'm okay with skipping over cassettes, but they are cool.
Right.
Speaking of that Prekel record, have you seen that box set that's coming out?
Yeah, I think it's out today, actually. It's 7 inches of Satanic Panic on it. Yeah.
Yeah. But I know you're a big Ghost fan, too, so.
Yeah, I'm very curious about the whole thing. I mean, this guy Papa Nil is now emerging from the shadows and seems to be a prominent character in the story. I love the whole story that they have going on.
So do I.
The cardinal and the sister and all this.
I bought into that from the beginning, and I think it's exactly what we needed in music. And I'm, it kind of bummed me out when people, wanted to out Tobias and kind of, you know, he had to kind of drop the shtick and have the two personas. And I like the mystery. I mean, I remember one of the first times I interviewed a nameless ghoul, and everyone was telling me that really, you know, we're on the, in the know, you interviewed Tobias, that was him. And they were, you know, they're showing me pictures and a wedding ring, and they were showing, look, his hands are the same as they are when he's on stage as Papa. And I loved all that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And now you interview him and it's like, he's just Tobias, and it's still cool.
Yeah.
But you know, it's the same thing with Slipknot when we didn't know who they were, under the mask. It's so much fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Jason, it's always great talking rock with you. And yeah, anytime, you're welcome back here on Talking Metal.
Thank you, man. And I really appreciate the support. And hopefully we'll get out to the U.S. soon.
Yeah, please. If you're ever down in New York, let me know. I'd love to hang out. We had lunch with your wife when we were up there at Heavy Montreal, and she was awesome. So please say hello to her from myself and Emily.
Absolutely, man.
All right. Cover Green Machine by Slaves on Dope. The covers album, the second covers album by Slaves on Dope, or EP, I guess I'd call it, is out now. So go download that, like I did, on iTunes. All right, guys? And this is a little treat of a song no one's heard before. This is my friend Rob Dukes, the former vocalist of Exodus and also the current vocalist of Generation Kill, doing Simple Man, the Skynyrd classic. And I have to admit, this isn't what I was expecting, and it is phenomenal. Rob kills this. You know, it sticks pretty close to the actual Skynyrd version, but, you know, strays a little bit here and there. I love it. I love it. Rob, great job on this. A great song by the band Lynyrd Skynyrd, performed by Rob Dukes and his buddies. Here we go, Simple Man.
Mama told me
Simple Man by Dukes here on Talking Metal. Let's debut the brand new Vessel of Light. This is Meat and Bone here on Talking Metal. This band, of course, features Ron Lipnicki on the drums. And Ron has played with Overkill. I don't know if Ron's on the album or he just does the... I think he is on the album. Or he just does the live shows. Dan Lorenzo on the guitar. Nathan Opposition on the vocals. Here we go. Right here. Brand new. World premiere. Vessel of Light. Meat and Bone. Of Light here on Talking Metal. Let's see the press release. It says about 3 years ago, Dan Lorenzo, founding member of Hades and Nonfiction, first came upon the Ancient Wisdom video for the song The Opposition. Lorenzo became obsessed with this song and reached out to Ancient Wisdom's Nathan Opposition. The duo eventually decided to work on writing new music together, and Lorenzo drove to Cleveland to have what would become the first ever Vessel of Light rehearsal. A month later, Lorenzo was back in Cleveland, and he and Opposition recorded 7 songs in one day. Those recordings became the first Vessel of Light EP. And anyways, they've released a bunch of stuff since then, and there is new music on the way. They recently played a few shows in New Jersey and one in Brooklyn. So there you go, Vessel of Light. The first single off the new album, their third recording, is Meat and Bone. And you just heard that one. Not Meat and Bones, Meat and Bone. Don't be fooled by the song's title. The band and the song have some twists and unexpected turns beyond the double meaning of the title. Okay, there you go. Twists and turns. All right, so that's gonna do it. Well, actually, no, because let's do this. I mentioned this to Tobias in the interview. My friend had done the Ghostbusters theme song done in the style of Ghost, and I assume Tobias knew what I was talking about since he had tweeted about it, but as it turns out, he doesn't run his Twitter account, so he seemed to not know what the hell I was talking about. But Tobias, if you're listening, this is my friend Watt White from Maplewood, New Jersey, doing a real fun cover of the Ghostbusters theme song, even a little nod to the Ghostbusters 2 theme song in here. And he does it in the style of you, in the style of Ghost, and I think he did a great job with this. So here we go. We're in October now, right? Halloween. So to get ready for Halloween, here's a little fake Ghost doing the Ghostbusters theme song. Not the real band Ghost, but my friend Watt. Here we go to take us out, guys. Check it out. Ghostbusters theme song.
Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters.
If there's something strange in your neighborhood, who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
If there's something weird and it don't look good, who can you call?
Ghostbusters.
Ha! I ain't afraid of no ghosts. No. I ain't afraid of no ghosts. An invisible man sleeping in your bed, who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
I don't know. And Lucifer's voice running through your head, who can you call?
Ghostbusters.
That's right. I ain't afraid of no ghosts. They do nothing for me. Not scared at all, really.
Well, I guess we're gonna have to take control. If it's up to us, we've got to take it home.
Theme from Ghostbusters 2 by Bobby Brown. Underrated, if you ask me.
Ghostbusters.
Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
Anyone come to mind?
Ghostbusters.
Let me see.
Ghostbusters.
Oh, I know. How about
Satan?
Ghostbusters.
No, seriously, give me a call.
Ghostbusters.
Who you gonna call? Anyways, to sum up,
Satan.
Boo! They're just kidding.